This week on the Pro Wrestling Podcast, Jon Moxley opens up about his decision to enter rehab. Logan Paul shoots on The Rock. Booker T body shaming Adam Cole, baby. And Kenny Omega resurfaces and talks about his thoughts on New Japan Pro Wrestling and the Forbidden Door. I'm your host, Seth Grimes, and this is the Pro Wrestling Podcast. What the fuck is up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Pro Wrestling Podcast. I am your boy, Seth Grimes. And what a crazy-ass week we got again for you here today. Different than last week, though. Last week was a lot of drama going on with Sasha Banks possibly being gone from WWE and Jeff Hardy drinking and driving. And, oh yeah, Vince McMahon stepping down from CEO of WWE because he's banging chicks in the office and then paying them off. Craziness last week. This week, not so much craziness, but there was a lot of great interviews going on this week. It was interesting because I started the week, I got through to like Thursday with like maybe two stories to talk about. And I was out. This happens a lot, by the way, where I get nervous sometimes during the week. Like if there's a slow start to the week, and then I'm kind of like, am I going to even have enough to talk about this weekend? You know, am I going to have to pull shit out of my ass? Like a couple TNA stories like I did a couple weeks ago. But lots of great content to sift through this week. So I'm excited to bring it to you. I'm excited to talk about them, to be honest with you. I've been looking forward to getting into these stories. So enough of me blabbing. Let's just dive right into them. And we'll get into our first story here, which is Jon Moxley opens up about his decision to enter rehab. Mox was on the Sessions podcast with his wife, Renee Paquette, this week. And kind of an awkward conversation, to be honest with you. Mox is a weird guy. He's an awkward guy. It was weird, like, window insight into his relationship with Renee. You can kind of see like the dynamic between the two, and you can tell that there's a lot of love there, but Mox is kind of a weird guy and he's a little awkward, but he really opened up in this conversation. I think it took a little while, and that might have been what kind of added to the awkwardness. You know, he had to kind of warm up to being able to just kind of let it all out, but he really just went into great detail about his decision to enter rehab, you know, the things that were leading up to that and what was making him feel like he was basically at a point where he had no other choice but to go in. And lots of other great shit in the conversation, but that was what I wanted to focus on. So take a listen to this clip, check out what Mox had to say about it, and we'll catch you on the other side.
Yeah, so I was like really worried something like that was gonna happen, and I just like, it was getting, I was just so exhausted with it because everything has to like revolve around staying level. And like, I couldn't enjoy wrestling because I was just I was so worried about that.
You're battling, you know, all day.
Because like, you can't go on TV and wrestle f-ed up. Mm-hmm. So I had to be like sitting there worried, going through withdrawal, where, you know, so like as soon as I got done, like it's like this big wave of relief, like, oh, okay, I got through another day. Got through another TV and didn't have a seizure and die on live TV. Sweet. So I immediately start getting loaded because now it's been however long with it. So, and then you just end up drunk again. Yeah. So it's like this never ending cycle of hell. Like there was like months. There was absolute hell. Now my body literally can't function without alcohol. Mm-hmm. It's like embarrassing to admit that.
Yeah, props to Mox for just having the courage to know that he had to go in and for saying something and doing something about it. Going to Renee, going to Tony Khan and being like, yo, I have a problem. I need to go into rehab. And it takes a big man to make that kind of decision. It takes a lot of balls to do that. So props to him. Cause I can see, you know, he mentioned, you know, he felt kind of embarrassed and, you know, he was nervous about people finding out exactly what was going on because it shows that he's, you know, especially for a guy like Mox, who's very much a man, you know what I mean? That, you know, it shows a sign of weakness in a way. A sign of failure to a certain extent. Like, how did you let yourself get to this point? And he was embarrassed by it. But at some point, the need to get your life together and to suck it up and work on yourself kind of outweighs the need to be secure and not be embarrassed publicly or whatever. And, you know, I think a lot of people, for the most part, everybody just supported Mox. You know, they really stood by him. Tony Khan stepped up and was just like, yeah, dude, take all the time you need. Your spot's here for you when you come back. I don't know if there was help financially or not, but certainly the support was there. I think I heard that WWE had paid for Moxley's rehab. It's good to see that Mox is healthy now. He's on the non-alcoholic beers, which is funny. He's doing the whole non-alcoholic beer gimmick. And that helps him. I mean, it helps him get through. He says they're like some special kind of vitamin energy, super fucking hydrating electrolyte beers or something with no alcohol. And it just, you know, even for myself, I used to be a smoker. I used to be a pack a day Newport 100 smoker for like 10 years and just fucking smoking my lungs black, right? And it's hard. Like, you need things to wean yourself off of your habit. And sometimes it's just the something in your hand, you know, they talked about that too, just having something. And Mox said, you know, like his after show ritual was drinking, you know, he'd go back to the locker room and, you know, good show, bro. And, you know, fist bumps everywhere and just start kicking back some fucking brews or a bottle of whiskey or something. And that was his habit for so long that it's, you know, even after your body kicks the physical addiction of alcohol, you know, your mind still has those, it's almost just the habit, you know, it's not an addiction per se, but your body wants to be in the habit of drinking things, holding things, cracking things, you know. So, a lot of alcoholics will have like water bottles and stuff like that. And, you know, to each his own, whatever works, you know. I'm glad to see he's clearly very healthy, clearly very happy now. He's doing better, you know, one day at a time. Every day, everything's a struggle, you know. It's not going to be easy every day, but he seems almost disgusted by it now, which is also a good sign. You know, he said, and this could just be bullshit, but I don't think so, that, you know, that the thought of drinking is just disgusting to him now. And I understand that too from being a smoker, is that, you know, I couldn't smoke a cigarette now. First of all, like, it's gross. I've convinced myself that they're disgusting, because they are. But also just, I would feel like I failed, or like it was a setback, right? Like, oh, you work so hard to clean up and you're able to sustain it for so long, and now all of a sudden you're going to start going back. What are you, a fucking helpless puss? So props to Moxley. And it was a really great interview with Renee. Like I said, it was very awkward at points. And I think, one, just because John's an awkward guy. And I think, two, just because John was really uneasy about opening up about all this stuff, or how far he wanted to go with opening up about this stuff. But I'm glad he did. I think a lot of other people will be glad he did too. I think a lot of people will need to hear his story and are going to want to use that for their own inspiration. And there was a lot of other good shit in this interview too. Moxley definitely got into, you know, his want to wrestle Tanahashi and the whole Forbidden Door stuff. And he also got into the Blackpool Combat Club and how that came about. And just, you know, all things wrestling aside from the rehab and such too. So great interview. I would highly recommend you seek it out. It will be down in the description below if you're watching on YouTube. And I believe it should be in the podcast links as well. So go check that out and we will catch you in the next clip. Well, the five-time WCW champion and two-time Hall of Famer Booker T got himself into a little bit of trouble this week on the internet, as he's prone to do. Booker T is very much very outspoken and, in my opinion, puts his foot in his mouth quite a bit. In this case in particular, he was talking about the injuries that were occurring in AEW, and Booker T never shy to take under the table shots at AEW. And then he has to keep coming back out and defending himself too. Oh, I don't hit AEW. But why do people accuse him of that? Because he doesn't ever take shots at WWE. It's always just AEW, and his go-to is always just like, hey, man, I got people from my school that work there, so it doesn't matter. Clearly, Booker T's got a hair up his ass about AEW, and his comments about Adam Cole rubbed a lot of people the wrong way when he said this.
People want to make it look like I'm hating on an AEW guy, and I'm not. You know, if I didn't like Adam Cole, I wouldn't be saying, man, we need to get some muscle on him. I'd be saying a whole lot worse than that, I think. You know what I mean? Opposed to trying to advocate how we could, you know, make Adam Cole look better, I think I would be saying a whole lot worse, you know what I mean, if I was trying to down Adam Cole. But that's what the internet does, man.
Then, of course, Hangman Adam Page jumped in with a tweet saying something like, I hope, you know, when I retire, that I, you know, I'm not a dick face on a podcast, basically. I do believe Renee Paquette jumped in too and was kind of like, hey, I thought we were past this whole body shaming stuff at this point. Look, this is a tough one because, first of all, body shaming's bullshit, right? Coming from a fat guy, body shaming's, there's no place for it. But, and as much as I will say, and as I said, you know, I'm not a fan of Booker, and I do think he puts his foot in his mouth a lot, and I think he's kind of a douchebag, to be honest with you. You know, this is a man that, like, when CM Punk sent that tweet out that these old dinosaurs should just die or whatever, Booker T was like, took that to heart, even though Punk was talking to Eric Bischoff, you know. Booker T took that to heart because he talked shit about Punk and AEW, and he was ready to fight. He's like, I got to handle my shit. You say it to my face, I got to handle my shit. So, Booker T's a douchebag. But, in this case, I think Booker T wasn't body shaming Adam Cole. I think people are a little too sensitive these days online, and I think they took that to heart. And look, it's not without precedence because Booker T bashes AEW a lot. That's why I'm talking about it, because this, it's not just something you say one time where people could be like, eh, it's your overall body of work of being kind of a douche online. So people took offense to this, and look, Adam Cole's been catching a lot of shit in general. Adam Cole's getting a lot of heat over his body right now. And look at the man. He's skinny as fuck, bro. Here's where I lie on this. Adam Cole's one of the most talented people in the entire world, right? That's why he's a main eventer anywhere he goes. He's the shit. But Adam Cole is also a professional wrestler. And I feel like when you're a professional wrestler, especially at a main event level, that you should make an effort of some kind to keep yourself in shape. It's like when the Batman movie was coming out and it was like delayed because of COVID or whatever, Robert Pattinson was catching some heat online by saying that he's not exercising for or working out or trying to bulk up to play Batman. He's just gonna be himself, and he's like barely even at, you know, he's just looking a little out of shape or whatever, because as we all were during COVID, and he was just like, ah, fuck it, you know, and people were kind of pissed at him. Like, bro, you're going to be playing the Batman in a movie. Take it seriously and get yourself into Batman shape, right? And he's just like, nah, fuck you. I'm just going to walk in there and I'm going to play it as I am. And look, that worked out fine, of course. And Adam Cole works out fine. You know, his matches are always entertaining. It doesn't take away from his in-ring performance. But look, as a professional wrestler, I do believe you owe it to your audience to look the part to a certain extent, okay? If you are a professional wrestler, you should be going to the gym and you should be at least trying to at least put on a little muscle. I'm not saying the dude needs to go do roids and do all that, but I feel like you owe it to fans as a professional wrestler. You owe it to your... He's not... It's part of the business, okay? It's not a body-shaming thing. Being an athlete, being a physical specimen, being a fucking real-life superhero is... It's part of the gig. And I think it's something that Adam Cole's been skating by. And even so, you can tell the difference from his time in NXT to where he is now. It's like he's not even trying. And I've noticed this with Sammy Guevara, too. And it's been since his little fucking soiree with Tay Conti. But he's skinnied out, too. He was starting to bulk up a little bit. His shoulders were getting beefy. He had pecs. He had abs. You look at him, you couldn't tell the difference between him and Fuego del Sol the other week. They were both skinny little bitches. So, look, at the end of the day, body shaming has no place out there, right? People shouldn't be spending their time criticizing people's bodies. But at the same time, when you're a professional wrestler, I think part of that gig is looking the part. You're an action star. You're a superhero. You're not a dude just off the street, just fucking. I mean, he's a beanpole. He's a meme at this point, like the Cornette thumbnails. He's skinny in the Cornette thumbnails. You know, it's like maybe there's a bad. I mean, nobody should be criticizing him, but Cole should be taking his job seriously. And honestly, like, I look at him different for that. I look at him as somebody, you know, it feels like he thinks he can skate by on his talent alone, which is 90-95% of it. But look, man, this is a entertainment sport where these are tough guys fighting each other, competing, and walking around in their underwear. So at the very least, you could be bigger than your girlfriend, but Adam Cole doesn't seem to think so, and you know what? Half the internet doesn't seem to think so, and Booker T caught a lot of heat for that this week, and I don't think that that's where he was coming from, but he usually does come from there, so it's worth kind of pushing back against him a little bit, and you know, he might push back for me, because at the same time as I say Booker T shouldn't say shit like that, I'm saying shit like that, but I think other people will agree with me. Not saying that he needs to be chiseled, but I am saying that he needs to put a little bit more effort into being a professional wrestler, because that's the gig, right? On to the next. Logan Paul opened up this week about his relationship with The Rock. Logan was apparently friends with The Rock. Logan Paul opened up this week about his relationship with The Rock. Apparently, they were buddy-buddy. You know, they did some videos together, and they were on friendly terms and stuff. And then Logan did that video for his YouTube channel where he thought it was a good idea to go camping in those woods in Japan where everybody kills themselves. Everybody hangs themselves from the trees. It was like the suicide forest or something like that. And he thought it was a good idea to go camping in these woods. And while he was in there, they came across an actual real-life dead body that was hanging in the woods that hadn't been discovered yet. And Logan decided to post that video. And after that, he caught a lot of heat from the internet, you know, immediate shame. And The Rock's publicist sent word that he wanted to cut all ties from Logan, that he requests that Logan take down all videos and pictures and anything that has to do with him and The Rock together. He wanted to completely, like, separate himself from that. So take a look at this clip on just, you know, how all that played out from Logan's perspective and how he feels about The Rock now and where they're at right now.
This was one of the saddest moments of my life, what I'm about to say. After Japan happened, obviously found myself in a hole, rightfully so, that I had never been in before.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely low mentally. And I got a call from my publicist, who also repped Dwayne, The Rock Johnson. And she's like, hey, Dwayne has asked that you remove every picture and video that you've done with him. And maybe in the future, you know, the relationship can be reconciled. But for now, he basically wants nothing to do with you. Which I also understood. I get it. You know, I made a grotesque error, and he has had things happen in his life where, like a lot of people, that incident affected him in vastly different
in a personal way.
Personal way.
I get you.
So I understood it, and that was the other part.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, fuck. Fuck, I you sleep in the bed you make, right? But I just wish I would have gotten like a call or a text or something. Because like I thought we had a healthy relationship, an open line of communication, and I was so sad that my hero wanted nothing to do with me.
Yeah, this one's a tough one because I can see where Logan would feel offended, because if you're not down with me on my worst day, then I don't want you around on my best day, right? He doesn't need The Rock to be his fair weather fan, you know? And The Rock, friendship isn't fair weather, you know? You're friends with people in their worst times and their best times, you know, even if you disagree with them, even if you don't like them. And then the bigger thing about it is that Logan said that Rock never even reached out to him. You know, it wasn't even that Rock was like, hey, bro, like, I gotta kind of publicly separate myself from you. It was that he felt that they were friendly and that The Rock was just like, you know, nothing. Had nothing to say to him. Wasn't even couldn't even explain himself in a text or a phone call and be like, look, bro, I love you, but you fucked up. And publicly, I just can't have my image, you know, attached to that. And from The Rock's perspective, I understand what he's talking about. Like, you need to, if you're going to have, Rock's got a very squeaky clean image for the most part. You know, he's not involved in dirty things. He's not associated with shady characters other than like Vince McMahon, for example. But The Rock has a very pure image, you know, especially if he does intend to run as president in the future. He doesn't need videos out there that people can like pull up while he's running for president, even though there's plenty in the wrestling.
No, stick it in, Hermie!
No. But he could argue that that's entertainment. But videos of him hanging out with people like Logan Paul that put up things like, you know, dead bodies hanging from trees in the woods. But, you know, at the same time, like, if you're an actual friend of somebody, you can still be their friend through the tough times, even if you don't agree with them. And you can tell them why. You know, like, have the private conversation. Look, dude, you can understand this. Publicly, I can't be tied to you right now. You know, I love you. I support you. I hope you get your shit straight. I hope you come back from this. But just right now, we just got to separate a little bit, you know? There was no support there. And then the fact that after Logan Paul kind of cleaned up his image a little bit and kind of brushed it all off and was able to get back on track and become, you know, a huge star all over again, suddenly The Rock comes out of the woodwork again. And I'm not knocking The Rock, you know, I'm not trying to say he's a I'm not trying to knock The Rock for coming out of the woodwork per se, but that's what he did, right? You know, all of a sudden Logan's, you know, doing good again. So The Rock wants to come around again and be friends again, you know, and they touched on in this podcast too, that The Rock does have a tendency to tie himself to younger, hipper, cooler people. You know, a lot of the people that last, that stand the test of time, have a tendency to do that, which is fine. That's part of the game too, right? You want to, if you want to stay fresh and young, you got to be around the fresh and young people. But yeah, I see where Logan Paul's coming from too. Look, people fuck up, especially people that are young, you know, he's in his 20s, people that get a lot of fame really fast. He was a kid and he fucked up and he did something stupid, and you can't, like, you can be mad at him for it, but you gotta, like, move on at some point and chalk it up to just kids doing dumb shit, right? Everybody does. You have, I have, we all do. So, you know, he's got himself in a better place now, and I just think that if you're really a friend, that you ride it out with somebody, even if you do got to publicly separate, which is fine, and I agree to that to a certain extent, and I understand that. Just the way that it went about was kind of shady. So I feel like I agree with Logan Paul on this one, even though I understand fully where The Rock is coming from and why he feels the way he does. I think the way he handled it was just a sign that Logan's not really his friend, and that it's just something for The Rock's image is what it seems like, or at least that's how it was taken. Kenny Omega has resurfaced on the internet. He showed up to do an interview with Sean Ross Sapp on Fightful, and he talked about all kinds of cool things. This was a very good interview. Kenny didn't really hold back. You know, a lot of this interview was on the relationship with AEW and New Japan and how Kenny feels about New Japan. There was some fun stuff in there too about Will Ospreay. I feel like he was kind of, they either have heat in real life, or it's like a really like subtle inside rib to Will Ospreay. You know, they might be really close friends, or they're working an angle. Either way, he kind of buried Will Ospreay in this interview. I almost used that clip, to be honest with you. But I thought this was a little bit more newsworthy, because Kenny Omega had a lot to say about the Forbidden Door and how it came about, and him being a guy from New Japan and just the struggles that management have had just trying to work with each other. And where AEW wanted this to go from right from the very beginning, that they had this envision. Check out this clip of Kenny talking about it.
Then you come over and there are these words that New Japan is upset about this. Did you think that this would realistically happen based on the reaction they gave you when you said that you were leaving?
I did, actually. I knew that any sort of bad blood or ill will that maybe the suits had towards me, I knew that wasn't an opinion that was shared by the locker room. And I knew eventually New Japan to get into a position to be as prominent as they were in the wrestling culture and in Japan, that was all because the wrestlers really kind of took control and made it and made New Japan the wrestling promotion that they wanted themselves to become. So I knew that once the wrestlers took control again, and once it was less of an issue of myself and the current management, that we could get to a point where we were discussing, you know, Forbidden Door or whatever the other possible name could have been. So I was glad that even though I left under cloud, that we were able to bring things back to wrestlers talking productively with other wrestlers that wanted to do something really cool and change the landscape of wrestling. And, you know, of course there has been a management shift since I had left, and they were very much in line with that same vision. So it doesn't, if anything, the most surprising thing was that it took so long.
So you want to know what I really think? I think Kenny Omega is going to come back at Forbidden Door. I think that's where he's going to make his return. I think that's why he's resurfacing now. You know, he said that he felt like it was important to get his name out there and kind of show face, you know, be a face of the company and a speaker for this Forbidden Door project. And he's saying that he's doing the media to just, you know, be involved with it. But I think, you know, we've heard things have been very quiet on when we could expect Kenny Omega to come back. And after hearing this conversation and hearing him take shots at Will Ospreay a little bit, I'm kind of thinking that Kenny's on his way back in. Maybe not. Maybe we still got time to go. Either way, the things that he had to say about this whole New Japan AEW Forbidden Door gimmick, how it came about and just everything that went into it, you know, this was their idea from the very beginning. You know, these were guys, you know, the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, even Cody at the time. These were guys that came from New Japan Pro Wrestling. They spent time there. They know what that was all about, and they respected it. And they wanted the opportunity when they started AEW, they wanted to work together. They envisioned a world where AEW could work with other companies. Now they own Ring of Honor, so certainly that one's something that we're always going to see now. But that relationship with New Japan was hard to come by. The old management had a lot of beefs. I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that Kenny Omega left New Japan Pro Wrestling and that the Young Bucks were gone from New Japan Pro Wrestling. You know, that was a huge blow when that happened, you know, because they had just recently lost AJ Styles not that long before it and Shinsuke Nakamura. They were just losing a lot of major talent all at once. And that was a huge blow to New Japan. And their management was fairly salty about it. And they didn't want to have anything to do with AEW for a long time. But with the new management in, and Kenny had kind of implied that now it's the wrestlers, you know, now wrestlers are back in charge. So I don't know who's in the management position in New Japan. I don't know if they are former wrestlers. It sounds like everything's just kind of going between Rocky Romero and Ghetto and these and Tony Khan and probably the Bucks and Kenny too, I would imagine, are who's kind of putting this whole deal together at this point. And kind of all the bullshit corporate interests are being pushed out of it. And of course, there's going to be some to politics to this still to an extent. You know, I don't want my guy to lose or this, that, or the other thing. But really, honestly, just being able to pull this together was a fucking miracle. It really was. And, you know, props to AEW and New Japan for partnering with each other and making this happen. And, you know, Kenny Omega and all of his work that went into it, being that bridge between New Japan and AEW, the guy that worked there, the guy that is friendly with all the talent there and all of that. So props to him. Props to AEW New Japan for just making this happen and putting on a dope-ass event that I think will be fun to watch. So looking forward to seeing that even after all the injuries kind of fucking just snake bit the whole card, right? You know, it'll still be a bunch of good wrestling, so that'll be cool. And it'll be dope to see the return of Kenny fucking Omega. Tony Khan did his traditional pre-pay-per-view conference call for Forbidden Door this week. And talking all about the Forbidden Door pay-per-view, of course, but there was one question in particular that kind of got into the dirt of Jeff Hardy and Jon Moxley and if there's a wellness policy in AEW or any kind of plan to address this on a broader level. And it kind of set Tony off a little bit. And during the process, Tony kind of also gave an update on Jeff Hardy. So check out this clip.
Jon Moxley recently talked to ESPN about his experience going to rehab for, you know, alcohol problems. And with your recent statement coming out about Jeff Hardy's suspension after being arrested for a DUI, have you thought about instituting any kind of wellness policy in AEW given some of the recent occurrences? Or is there something in place already that you haven't talked about? I was just wondering if you could shed a little.
We have a wellness policy, but in the case of drinking, I think it's, you have to be really careful, because most people, I think, you know, 99% of the roster has drank really responsibly. And to be honest with you, I think they're totally different things. And I think it's comparing apples and oranges when you mention the two things, like they're the same thing. And I think that one person realized, and that's why I handled them completely differently, Sean. And they're completely different things.
PW Insider is up next. Mike will be followed by Brandon Thurston.
Can I go back, Jim? Is that okay? Thanks. Jeff is doing much better. And as I understand, Jeff's in treatment, and I don't want to say too much about what's going on because it's his business, but I'm here for him for whatever he needs. I'm really glad nobody got hurt. But what Jeff did going out and driving is totally different from the other thing. And I just don't like hearing the two of them compared, if that makes sense. And I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't give Jeff a lot of credit for now doing the right thing. And this is how he said, Jeff's got to do the right thing. And if he wants to stay with AEW, because it's Last Chance Saloon, man.
Yeah, you could kind of tell in the tone that Tony Khan was a little bit pissed there. And I don't blame him. You know, I've been able to pick up on that with Tony. He gets into these calls and he gets very excited and he gets all nerdy and geeky and he's having fun. And then somebody asks him a question that irritates him. And he just, you can tell by his tone that he's pissy about it, right? And Sean Radican from the Pro Wrestling Torch had, brought up the fact, with Moxley and Jeff Hardy, and Tony went off, and rightfully so, because inherent in the question was that, or implied in the question at least, was that the Moxley situation and the Hardy situation were the same thing, and they weren't at all, and that really pissed Tony off, and he really went off on it, in the conference call. He addressed it. Matter of fact, I've never seen him, the guy was ready to move on, and Tony's like, actually, can I go back to that and rant on it a little bit more? And in that, he said that this was Jeff Hardy's last chance, that, this is Hardy's last chance to fuck up, and it is. Jeff Hardy and the Moxley situation are two completely different things. Moxley wasn't feeling like a normal human being. He was a high-functioning alcoholic that was about at his breaking point. He wasn't out drinking and driving. He wasn't out being any kind of danger to society. He was just a fucking miserable, puffy-faced, red-faced, balding fuck, right? So Jeff Hardy, completely different. He's out drinking and driving, which was not a first-time situation for him, which makes it worse. This is habit at this point. This wasn't, I made a mistake or whatever. This was, no, this is just what I do when I get drunk. I go, we're just going to go on a trip in our favorite rocket ship, going to the sky, little Einstein. So, yeah. Rightfully so for Tony Khan to be pissed about comparing the two. He did say that they have a wellness policy. He didn't address exactly what it was or what it covered. Them being a private company and not public, he doesn't have to disclose that. And we've heard stories of Tony Khan being a weed smoker, so I'm sure that has nothing to do with it. And clearly, just by watching Tony Khan, it's either a ton of coffee or a little bit of, a little powder on the nose. Either way, he doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that's going to be very strict about that kind of stuff. They touched about that too. He's like, I'm not going to be that hard on alcohol. I'm not going to have an alcohol policy because people like to go out and drink after shows. And Tony's probably one of them, right? And most people don't fuck up, so it's not really a thing he wants to enforce. But he does say that he has a wellness policy. I'm sure it's more geared towards rehab and recovery and making sure that people are doing okay, making sure that they're safe and that they're healthy, and not so much punishing people, you know. And Radican from The Torch, when he asked that question, was almost fishing. I think he actually used the word, what kind of punishments or whatever, you know, like, and that kind of mentality, I fuck off with that kind of mentality too, you know. How are we going to punish these people that are fucking up? It's not about that. It's how can we help these people that are fucking up? And I think it's a very distinct, different way of looking at things. And I think Radican at least sounded like he was coming from sort of a righteous place when he was saying that, kind of an indignant place, like, you know, these drinkers need to be put in their place, you know. And I just don't think that that's a good way to look at it or a fair way to look at it, you know. So I feel like Tony handled it well, and, you know, he addressed that. He handled the two in different ways for a reason. That, you know, Moxley came to him and said, man, I'm at my breaking point. I think I got to go into rehab. As compared to Jeff Hardy, was out drinking and driving and caught drinking and driving for his third time. Doesn't mean that that was his third time drinking and driving. That means that was his third time getting caught drinking and driving. After he was already out lying to everybody, saying he was doing well and that, you know, he didn't have a problem with anything. You know, he was assuring everybody when he left WWE that he was clean and on the right path and all that. So two way completely different things. And I do applaud the way Tony Khan has handled them both. Moxley with care and compassion, and Hardy with stern strictness. You know, a stern tone. This is your last chance. Because it is Hardy's last chance. If he fucks up in any way, shape, or form like that again, he's not going to get to work in this business anymore. He's going to be Jake the Snaked. He's going to be the drunk guy out on the indies, fucking barely able to wrestle a match like his match with Sting. So that's kind of where we're heading with that. Props to Tony Khan. And go listen to the whole conference call if you like. A lot of forbidden door shit, but there's a lot of other little good tidbits in there and stuff. Because Tony doesn't hold back, you know. Tony doesn't kayfabe much either, you know. He'll kind of tell you where he's going with things, how he's feeling about things, what he's thinking about things. And he does like to shoot like that. So go check that out. Link in the description. And on to the next. MJF made the news again this week, this time from a very unlikely source. This was on the Wendy Williams show. I have never watched the Wendy Williams show a day in my life. This is actually the first time I've even heard of the Wendy Williams show. And apparently Sherry Shepherd is the host of the Wendy Williams show, which I don't know what's going on there either. Don't know if Wendy Williams is out with a health issue or if Sherry Shepherd is just taking over while she's on vacation. I don't know. I don't care, to be honest with you. I do know who Sherry Shepherd is, though. I'm at least familiar with the name and vaguely familiar with the person. You know, I've seen her on TV and stuff before. So this was an interesting clip here where just randomly she brings up on her talk show as just like one of her warm-up, like, sit down, like, hey, how you doing today? So I forgot to tell you the story. And she just gets into the story about MJF, of all people. And a professional wrestling story just pops up on daytime talk show TV randomly. And this is an amazing clip. This clip made me laugh. I popped for this clip. Check it out.
Here, I gotta tell you, there is a story that I forgot to tell you all the other day. When I was flying from Los Angeles to New York, I had an encounter with a former child star who appeared on the Rosie O'Donnell show back in 2001. Okay, so at the time, he was 5 years old, and some of you may remember him because his name is Maxwell Jacob Friedman. And Rosie had him on as a guest. He came on at 5, and he came to sing. This little cutie patootie, he was so adorable, and Rosie wanted to hug. You could tell he didn't even want to give Rosie a hug. He just was like... Now, young Max did not grow up to become a professional singer. He's wonderful. He is now 26 years old, and he goes by the initials MJF, and he's a professional wrestler, okay? Yes. He is a professional wrestler. MJF, and I guess the J in MJF stands for jerk, okay? And I'm gonna tell y'all why, because that's what he was acting like when I met him at the airport when we were waiting in the lounge. Not nice at all. And see, my son Jeffrey, he is a big wrestling fan. He knows all of the wrestlers, so he spotted MJF while we were waiting for the plane, Norman. Uh-huh. And, you know, Jeffrey was really nervous about going up to him and asking for an autograph, because you don't know. And so I said, I'll do it for my baby, because I'm Mother Bear. So I said I would go up and ask him for an autograph. And I know how to be with celebrities. I know they don't want you to do a lot of talking, Norman. So I was very nice, and I tapped him gently on the leg. And I said, excuse me, are you the famous wrestler MJF? He snapped back. He said, no! And so I said, okay. I said, but, well, do people tell you that you look like the famous wrestler MJF? Then he snapped back. He went, yes! And he put his headphones on and he turns away from me. Okay? And I wanted to say to him, I don't like your tone. That's what I wanted to tell him. And I was just like, he got one more time to snap at me before I laid a smack down on him. I was not playing. You got, really? Like, and then, like, Jeffrey was standing right there and he was smiling and everything. And then Jeffrey tells me, he goes, no, Mom, MJF is a bad guy and he's supposed to be a jerk. And I'm like, no. But here's the thing, y'all. I told my son, I said, but no, see, he don't know what a real bad guy is unless he pisses off a black mama trying to get a photo for her son. I'm trying to get a photo for my baby. Like,
everything about this clip made me smile. It warmed my heart in the best way possible. Just the fact that A, pro wrestling and AEW specifically, because they need it more, are getting name mention, recognition, spotlight on daytime talk show like this. Like, I'm sure, I haven't looked into it, but it seems like this Wendy Williams show is probably a popular show, and Sherry Shepherd's a popular person to a completely different audience than a professional wrestling might get that exposure. That's why, like, an AEW name drop, an MJF name drop, his picture being posted, all of that on national TV in the daytime talk show circuit for women at that, like, this just opens up to a whole huge new community of potential fans, or at least at the very least name recognition for MJF and AEW. So that was gold. Also, the Rosie O'Donnell clip. If you haven't seen that before, go check that out. They showed a bit of it here in this clip, so you got a little snippet of it at least if you haven't seen it. But the cute little MJF as a kid just, you know, going on the Rosie O'Donnell show. Didn't want to hug her. That was funny, of course. But the cherry on top is that MJF was a pure and utter dickhead to this bitch in the airport. And I fucking loved it. I popped so hard. He just basically told this bitch to fuck off. He yells, no, yes, headphones, turns away. And the best part, the very best part, the cherry on top of the cherry, the littler cherry on top of the cherry, is that her kid understood. Her kid got it. He gets the gimmick. No, Mom, that's MJF, you dumb fuck. MJF is supposed to be a dick. This is who MJF is. And, you know, of course, his mom was all, Sherry Shepherd's still all offended. She's like, you don't look at me. Very indignant about it. All of this was just fucking amazing. I love that MJF is a dick in real life. He lives the gimmick. I don't think he is as a person in real life, but he keeps kayfabe alive in the sense that he'll tell you to fuck right off to your face. He's an absolute dickhead. Which is great. And the fact that he was an absolute dickhead to this chick, and that it made national TV, and that her kid gets it. Her kid understands. No, this is MJF supposed to be an asshole, Mom. And she's all indignant about it. It's just great shit. I really wanted to put a spotlight on this. And it's good that MJF is still out there, you know, just being a dick to people and just keeping his name out in the public. And like I said, this is huge exposure for MJF and AEW. A lot more people are aware of both of those names now because of this segment. So props to Sherry Shepherd for that. I don't know if this was a work, you know, if she's like friendly with MJF somehow, or MJF's agent reached out somehow to leak this story to just kind of keep his name out there. I don't know how any of this shit works. Maybe it was a real life situation. Regardless, fucking great. Classic. I love when wrestling crosses over into the mainstream, and I love when it happens like this in a kayfabe way where the bad guy is a bad guy and everybody knows it. It's beautiful. It warms my heart. Athena, the former Ember Moon, made an appearance on the NBC Sports Boston show this week. I don't know if it was a radio show or a podcast or what exactly they were doing there. But she was on there talking all things AEW, a little bit of dishing on the WWE. But it was this particular clip that made a lot of news this week, where she was asked about who she thinks started this whole women's revolution thing. You know, what was the real catalyst for the women's revolution? Check out this clip with Athena's thoughts, and then I'm going to catch you on the flip side with my own thoughts.
One person who recently announced they're also going to be done with WWE, Paige, her contract ends July 7th, and she said she eventually could participate in wrestling because it seems like everyone who's injured eventually comes back because of just time heals all. Is that someone you'd love to see join up with you in AEW?
Absolutely. Like I tell people all the time, it's like everyone says the women's evolution started with the Bellas. No. I highly disagree. It started with Paige and Emma.
Yes. Thank like, you. Thank
Paige
you.
Paige and Emma, you know, or Tennille and Saraya, whatever name you want to call them. It started with them. That was the first like mainstream women's match that got time that made people like want more.
Yeah, you could certainly make a compelling case for Paige and Emma. Look, they had that match in NXT that really put them on the map. You know, far before there was the Bayley and the Sasha match, Emma and Paige had a hell of a match in NXT where they really went at it. And it put both of them on the map. Both of them got a lot of respect for that and really got a lot of eyeballs. And that certainly could be considered the start of the women's evolution, the women's revolution, whatever you want to call it. But you could go back even further than that. I honestly would put a lot of weight on Trish and Lita. Both of them were divas. Both of them did the bra and panties matches. So they weren't quite out of the woods from that to be considered, you know, taken seriously as professional wrestlers, like the women's evolution revolution certainly did, where women today are treated as equals as the men for the most part. Not always. They still don't always get the most time or the most effort put into their storylines, but they've had main events at WrestleMania and stuff now. And really, like, I don't think that those were necessarily all, like, you know, just token charity main events either, you know, to show how woke and progressive they are. I think, you know, in the case of like a Ronda Rousey and a Charlotte and a Sasha, these women have earned WrestleMania main events. Becky Lynch, Bianca Belair, these women earn their main event spots. So props to them. But years and years and years ago on Monday Night Raw, Trish Stratus and Lita main evented a Monday Night Raw, and they had a fucking match, a knockdown dragout match, like the best match that a Lita and a Trish at that time could have possibly put on. They really showed one that they could work, and two that they wanted to work and that they could bust their ass, and three that they could be main eventers, that they could put on as good of a show and be as entertaining and deserve as big of a spotlight as any of the men did. They really put themselves on the map on that match. You know, they had a huge feud, they had a ton of matches, but that one in particular was really special in a lot of ways. It was groundbreaking and historical as well. Trish Stratus Lita main event Monday Night Raw. I don't remember when it was exactly. I think it was probably the early 2000s. I don't think it was in the late 90s quite yet. I think it had gotten into probably like 2001, 2002-ish. But they tore it up, and they deserve it. Are they the best women's wrestlers of all time? No. But when you're really looking at when did this turn happen to where women wrestlers were starting to be taken seriously again? Because they were in the past. You know, the Fabulous Moolah era, you know, Sensational Sherry when she was a wrestler, Sherry Martel. They were, Medusa was certainly taken seriously, Bull Nakano. These women weren't fucking divas, you know, they were taken very seriously. But somewhere along the way, through the Attitude Era, where it became the bra and panty era, you know, women's wrestling was just shat on, you know. It was Sable, and it was puppies, and it was a bunch of bullshit, bra and panties matches. And I think Trish and Lita were the first two women to really like step outside that bra and panty box and really like show what women can do or what they can be, or at least that they deserve the opportunity to try, you know. So they were trend setters and groundbreaking performers in their day because of that. Moving forward, certainly the TNA Knockouts division deserves a lot of credit too. TNA Knockouts division was highly underrated because TNA, right? Nobody watches TNA. Nobody cares about TNA. So naturally, nobody's going to notice the Knockouts division or have it on their radar. But when you got Gail Kim out there, Tara was doing great work. Even the Beautiful People, in my opinion, even though they were like divas, I feel like they were still given proper spotlight. You know, they were a feature on the card. They were, they could have been main eventers in that time. Maybe they were even, you know, I might have missed that show or whatever. But the Beautiful People was a major act in TNA. You know, and Gail Kim was out there carrying the torch for the workers. And I think Jazz was in TNA for a certain extent during that time too. I'm sure I'm missing some too, but just, Madison Rain did a lot of good. She was a good worker. I'm probably forgetting more, but definitely just props to the whole TNA Knockouts division. I think, you know, in the time that Mickie James, I think, had an early run there too, prior to her run that's there now. I think she, you know, she was there before, contributing to the Knockouts division. So the Knockouts, Gail Kim, deserve a lot of props in this whole women's evolution revolution as well. I want to give a little bit of honorable mention to Michelle McCool. I think Michelle McCool in the Divas era, to me, seemed more legit. And I'm not even saying she was a great worker, but I took her seriously. I didn't look at her as a bra and panties or a diva or anything like that. She wasn't, you know, she looked like the kind of chick that would beat your ass if you had something to say. And she played the mean girl part well, with Lay Cool. And you know, I don't think she was groundbreaking in any way, but I think, you know, she at least deserves a little bit of honorable mention of being another brick in that path to the evolution. AJ Lee deserves so much credit, you know. AJ Lee, when she came in, she was like the anti-diva. Not in the way that Paige was. Paige was the anti-diva. That was kind of her gimmick and everything. You know, she was the goth chick and whatever, but she was still, you know, sexy and cleavage and stuff like that. AJ was like the tomboy, you know. She was just like the little sister type chick, and then she was the crazy chick and all of that. But I think AJ Lee, her character work, her promo work, in-ring, she had plenty of talent too. I wouldn't say she was like the greatest worker of all time, but she definitely wasn't the shits. But her character and personality, and even when she moved into the role of like a general manager and she had the like business suit thing going on, she carried a certain respect to her. I really think AJ Lee did a whole lot for the women's division when she was there. The time that she put in and the work that she did was, you know, if Michelle McCool was a brick in that path, I think AJ Lee was several bricks in that path. You know, she really helped progress that timeline, I think, and move it away from the Divas. Even though she was the Divas champion, it was the Divas era, I really think she had a significant role in moving it from the Divas to the women's. You know, she was many bricks in that path. The Bellas were mentioned in this interview. Somebody had said that the Bellas were the, or maybe it was the Bellas themselves claiming credit for that. I don't remember the catalyst for that. The Bellas were, if I'm going to give Michelle McCool credit for being a brick in that path towards, I'll give the Bella twins a brick in that path too. They were part of that transition. So they certainly they contributed to it. And especially Brie, even more than Nikki, put a lot of work into being a better in-ring performer. You know, they were definitely brought in because of their looks and the twin magic and all that. You know, they were a John Laurinaitis hire, you know, and he ended up with their mom, and who knows what's going on in that fucking perv's mind. But he brought them in for eye candy, but they were there. They worked. They progressively got better. They made an effort to get better, whether they did or not. Brie, I think, you know, certainly achieved a better in-ring performance than Nikki did by the end. And, you know, and that could be just by being married to Bryan Danielson. You know, that'll do it, because Danielson can certainly be the guy to fucking teach you how to work, right? So I think that helped a lot and gave a lot of credibility to them. And you know what? Even for that, maybe they deserve two bricks in that path. But I don't think necessarily they were the contributing ultimate factor to that as much as just paving the way towards that. Ultimately, if I had to say for sure, you know, I would say Trish and Lita were definitely the groundbreaking trendsetters, the people that got the ball rolling, that really significantly put a shift in it. Everybody else I talked about on the way up that path. But I think if you need to pinpoint who solidified it, and you know, you Paige and Emma, we already talked about, they were significant breaks in those paths. They were another huge jumps forward, even more than AJ Lee, I would say. Multiple bricks in that path just because they were able to have such a great rivalry and feud. And Paige, when she came in as the anti-diva, I think a lot of people kind of forget that, you know, because Paige has kind of just made her reputation of being kind of a whore and a Twitch gamer and, you know, kind of a non-entity to a certain extent, a manager for a while. But when Paige came in from NXT, she was the NXT champion, I think, when she won the Divas title. You know, she was called up to Raw like the night after WrestleMania. And we were all there for it. We were hyped for it. If you were watching wrestling at that point, the crowd popped like a motherfucker for Paige. They were ready for Paige to make her debut on the main roster. And when she did, man, because she had done such great work in NXT with the likes of Emma and I think, you know, whoever else she was working with at the time, I don't remember exactly, but there were, you know, Summer Rae, I think, was in the mix. But Paige, a significant bump in that. And, you know, AJ Lee putting over Paige on that Monday Night Raw, it was AJ Lee that Paige won that title for. So, again, the two of them just huge, huge steps forward in the women's evolution. But what really solidified it, in my opinion, is the Four Horsewomen. I think that's undeniable at this point. I think when Sasha, Bayley, Becky, and Charlotte came along, they were game changers because all four of them can work. All four of them are megastars. All four of them are main eventers. All four of them There's not a weak link in the bunch. You can't look at those four and be like, yeah, well, that one's just kind of tagged on because they're friends with her. You know what I mean? Like the four horse women, you know, you got Ronda, who's great. And then you got fucking Shayna Baszler, who's great. And then Marina and the other chick, Jessamine, are kind of meh, right? So they're just kind of tag-alongs. There were no tag-alongs in the four horsewomen of professional wrestling, of NXT. When they came up, you know, Bayley got left behind, but she kind of carried NXT on her back after the other three went up to the main roster, and she stayed behind for, like, what, another year, year and a half before she got called up. These four women changed the game for professional wrestling. That's when the actual women's revolution evolution came about. All of these other characters played a role in that path to the top, and all of them deserve their credit, their flowers, their honorable mentions. All of them did great, great work. But it was the four horsewomen that changed the game for professional wrestling, for women, and probably forever will, you know, because at this point, women's wrestling is taken seriously. And the problem with a lot of women's wrestlers is they're just no good. But the ones that are good, and that's where the women's wrestling division, that's why people like a Jim Cornette or whatever still sees that the women's matches a piss break. Why are the girls even on the card? You know, the girls match. I don't think of it that way, but, you know, a lot of them still have a lot of catching up to do in the talent portion. But there's so much talent out there. Other than the four horsewomen, you got chicks out there like Thunder Rosa and Serena Deeb and Chris Statlander and fucking Ruby Soho and Toni Storm and fucking Bianca Belair, Jesus Christ. All these women are going out there and just tear Rhea Ripley. The list goes on and on and on and on and on of the talent. Liv Morgan, I think, has been, she's progressed so much from when she started. You know, she's really earned her keep in WWE at this point. Natty, of course, has always been a staple. Natty deserves a lot of, like, honorable mentions behind the scenes, because we all know that she's just being a heart dungeon fucking, you know, princess, that she's, you know, tough as shit and can work. But she also holds that locker room together, you know, still to this day. She's, you know, she's queen bee for the ladies, I do believe, you know. She's the mama bear for them, and that's why she's around. And, you know, so she deserves a lot of credit too in all of this. So all of those women deserve all the credit, but I really, this topic excited me because I think the history of women's wrestling is it's an interesting history, it's an important history, and I'm glad that we're in the direction that we're going, because, you know, when you get a good women's match out there, it's just as good as any men's match, if not better a lot of times, you know what I mean? You know, like I had said, these main events, these women main events, they're not charity cases. They are deserving of the main event. You know, when Sasha and Bianca main event at WrestleMania, they fucking tore the house down. They did great. So props to the women's division and how far they've came along. And this was just something I was excited to talk about, so I wanted to bust it on you. And shout out to Athena for doing the interview. And go check it out. I did put the link in the description. And on to the next motherfucker. Chris Jericho had the boys from F4W Figure 4 Wrestling on his podcast this week. Lance Storm, Big Vinny V, and Brian Alvarez were on the show, and they were doing the classic album Clash. Typically, Jericho's done these on his podcasts over the years where he gets this panel together to talk about, to compare two albums, you know, track by track, which one's the better album. Usually it's music related. They've done it with the Beatles, Motley Crue, etc. But this was kind of a fun one because they did it on professional wrestling albums. And this led to a story because of the song Piledriver. They were talking about the song Piledriver, which was sung by Coco Beware. And this led to a very fun story that Chris Jericho had when he was a kid, when he used to, he was just a mark sitting outside the arenas hoping to meet a wrestler, right? And or going to the gym and hoping to meet a wrestler when they're in town for a show that night. And he was at a Gold's Gym, and he ran into Coco Beware and asked him for his autograph. And what follows is funny as fuck, and that's why I had to share it with you. Check out this clip.
Because all the guys, the Winnipeg Arena was like here, and then close to it over here was the Polo Park Inn, where the hotel where they all stayed, and across the street was the Gold's Gym. So it was like a Bermuda Triangle of Winnipeg WWF wrestling. So I used to go hang out at the Gold's Gym to try and see wrestlers and try and meet them. And I was always scared to talk because they were fucking huge back then and probably even bigger because I was just a kid. But I can remember Warrior and Warlord and Hercules. These guys are just shoulders like bowling balls. So very intimidating. So I would go talk to the smaller guys, Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty and those types of guys. And Coco Beware was always on the show. He got the Winnipeg every time. So I would read the card and Coco was coming. So I brought my copy of Pile Driver to Gold's Gym, hoping that I could see Coco. And I saw him and I had my album. And I was like, hey, Mr. Beware. Hey, Mr. Ware. I love your singing. Can you please sign my Pile Driver record? I think the song is great. And I think you're a great singer. And he's like, oh, that's really cool. So I remember he wrote on it, to my fan, Coco Beware. And he goes, I hope you enjoy the album. I said, yeah, I really do. He goes, let me ask you a question. I said, what? He goes, do you know where I can get any cocaine around here? And that was what at the time, 16 or so. I was like, well, yeah, man, the 17, maybe, like, let me ask around. I'd never seen cocaine in my life. I didn't know anybody that had cocaine, but I'd be like, what a great opening line. Oh, you like my album? That's awesome. Where can I get some coke?
That is a 1980 story.
I think the statute of limitations has run out on that, so yeah, I should be okay.
You said. Yeah, not surprised. I mean, it was the 80s in professional wrestling, so it's just hilarious. Not only, it's hilarious on so many levels, because not only is it Coco Beware asking a fan, right? A fucking fan, a mark, asking for his autograph. Sure, I'll sign your autograph. By the way, do you know where I can find some cocaine? I mean, it's so 80s, it's so professional wrestling, and quite frankly, it's on par for Coco Beware, too. It doesn't surprise me that, like, at no point when Jericho was telling the story, was it like, Coco Beware said that? You know, it's a fun little story. But it's also funny that that little kid grew up to be Chris Jericho, of all people. So now we got this story that Coco Beware hit up a young Chris Jericho for cocaine at a Gold's Gym back in the fucking 80s. This is, you can't make this shit up, folks. This is why I love professional wrestling so much. Wrestling is the greatest thing on earth ever. Just the history of it, all of these stories. You know, and I think, you know, these stories, we're not going to hear much of these stories anymore, because you're not going to hear a story of fucking Ricochet asking some fan in the Gold's Gym for cocaine, right? You're not getting, Baron Corbin's not going to hit some fucking dude up out in the back parking lot for some blow before the show. You know what I mean? It's, you're not going to hear that anymore. So, just the fact that the story exists, it's so professional wrestling, and it just warms my heart. Funny as fuck. I was listening to that podcast. I almost skipped it because, like I said at the beginning of the show, if you're watching the full show in the intro, I said there was a lot of content to go through this week, and I wasn't sure that, you know, Jericho's fucking classic album Clash was going to make the cut at all for any reason, but this was a funny as fuck story that I couldn't pass up, so I just had to kind of share it with you. And I highly recommend, you know, go check out the full story. I did leave a little bit out, of course, you know, if you want to hear that. Or just, you know, check out the classic album Clash between two WWF music albums. You know, both of them were the 80s ones, whatever those were. I don't remember exactly what those names were. I was a 90s guy, so my albums were like WWF the Music, volume 1s, 2s, 3s, 4, that kind of stuff. So, in any event, good shit, great shit. Just had to share it with you. And with that said, let's move the fuck on. That's it. We've made it. We've made it all the way to the end of the show. I want to thank you for sticking around. If you have stuck around to the end with me, I greatly appreciate you. Again, I mentioned this last week. I am still heavily kicking around the idea of starting to do this show in more of a current event format, just because, especially last week, right? We had Jeff Hardy's DUI was like a Monday thing. And then by like Tuesday, Wednesday, Vince thing happened. So like by the time we get to my podcast on Sunday, everybody and their mom's already covered it. Everybody's already researched it, watched all the videos. And then I'm kind of like the late comer to the party. You know, very rarely does news break right before my show, you know. So I'm kicking around the idea. And by kicking around the idea, I mean it will probably happen in the near future where you're going to start to see some of these clips happen early. You know, I'm going to start to maybe do the clips instead of all in one day and all in one sitting, probably do them throughout the week and then just compile them for a podcast, you know, do them throughout the week as they as the news breaks, you know, so to speak. So I'm toying around the idea of doing that. Look, I'm just trying to take this show into the future, you know, and I appreciate you guys hanging out with me, and I would love your input and how we can help this grow, because I feel like I'm doing a great product, but my numbers aren't where I'd like them to be quite yet, you know. But I'm here to stay. I'm here to rock this shit. I'm just looking for ways to grow, so I think that's the next step. You know, we've made this transition from audio to video so that my YouTube clips aren't just staring at a thumbnail the whole time. Now you get to see my pretty face. My pretty face. But I think, you know, also just being late to the news is also a hindrance too. So keep an eye out for that as things come. Of course, you know, the podcast won't change. We're still going to have the podcast for you here each and every week for the people that like to listen to the recap podcast. You know, that was the general idea of it. But as it switched into trying to do YouTube videos and TikToks and stuff like that too, to just help the podcast grow, to get recognition for the podcast, finding a lot of these stories are just kind of late to the dance. So we're going to try to be flexible and move on the fly, and we'll see how that goes. Also want to please ask you to hit a subscribe right down there below the red button. If you could, please just subscribe. Doesn't mean you got to watch all my videos. Just means that if I make a video that does pique your interest, you'll see it. You know, it'll pop up on your radar, hopefully. Throw me a like if you did like this video. It's this thing, right? The little thumbs up ski. Like, follow, and subscribe on social media. It's going to be TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, at Seth Grimes Media. I also have a link to donate down below at PayPal. If you want to help a brother out and help the cause and help me keep doing what I'm doing, it'll just allow me to, as I'm able to monetize this show, it's just going to allow me to put more time into it, more effort into it. And, you know, right now I'm kind of just weekend warrioring it, you know, after a week of a shoot job. Then I come in to do my my working job here. So also, I do have a book out, The Gathering, A Bold Journey into the Belly of the Juggalo Underworld. It's about a dude who used to be a juggalo, who is now not a juggalo at all, and he hates juggalos, and he gets sucked back into going to one more gathering of the juggalos. Even if you're not into juggalos or insane clown posse or any of that kind of stuff, just at its core, it's about a story of a dude going to a music festival, a miserable prick going to a musical festival. Does a lot of drugs and a lot of debauchery and a lot of fun stuff going on. So I do think you'll enjoy it. It's on Audible, Kindle, and paperback if you like to have something in your hands. Also, if you are into crypto or NFTs, not many people are, and especially nowadays with the market just basically taking a shit, but I think that's just the bubble popping, you know, and I do think it's going to balance itself out. But if you are like me and you are into these sort of things, I do have pro wrestling inspired NFTs. You can find those at CryptomaniaNFT.com, or you could just search all of that on social media. Those links are below as well. We have our championship collection. They are your favorite pro wrestling inspired championship belts mashed up with crypto, you know, so there's like the WWE
championship for Ethereum, that sort of thing. The metaversal title instead of the universal title. You get it. But enough of my plugs, enough of my bullshit. I thank you for sticking around to the end and just listening to my plugs. If I were me, I'd just shut them off anyway. But that's why I put them at the end, just so you don't got to deal with them at the beginning. But all of that is down below if you've listened and you want to oblige. And with that said, I am going to ride off into the sunset for another week. It has been my pleasure. I am your boy, Seth Grimes. Peace, love, and pizza. And this has been the Pro Wrestling Podcast. Podcast. Come on.